Your name's James.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do for a living?
Oh, boy. Okay, so my name is James, and what do I do? Right now, I do DevOps, but really just I program. I like technology. I like computers, just anything in there.
What's the most interesting project you've ever done?
Ever done? Jeez. It would have to be personal projects, because I've done so many things at work, but yeah, the most interesting things are just, I've always wanted to be an inventor, like create things. And when I was little, I always wanted to see something like, oh, I could make that. And of course I couldn't, but I would try. So things where I get to do that. Like I got into 3D printing, CAD modeling, and made like intricate little mechanisms. And that was very gratifying.
When did you start doing 3D printing?
I don't even know. Probably like a few years ago. I was really excited. I got one and it was so cool. I'm going to do so much with it. And then I sat there and realized, I don't know what I'm going to do with this thing. Mm-hmm. So sat there. And then one of my friends wanted to buy a lightsaber at Disney, like one of those props, and they were out. And of course, like, I don't think like, well, they'll come back in stock. I think, well, I could make one. And that's my answer for everything. Like, oh, that I can make that bed. I can make this chair. I can make this whatever. So like, yeah, I can make one from scratch with no experience. And so I spent a year and I made one completely from scratch.
Lightsaber?
Yeah. Like one of the light up ones, you swing it around. That was a lot of fun. That's probably my most fun project because I had to learn electronics. I had to do 3D printing. I had to learn how to paint. I had to learn how to paint in my garage in the freezing weather at 1 a.m. in December and get that done before we got on the plane. So like everything. That was a lot of fun.
So, and that's similar to DevOps because you kind of just attack problems and you try to find solutions to these unknown spaces.
Yeah, I guess so. I've been programming forever, right? Like I learned when I was 12 or younger and just kind of kept going. So most of what I'm learning is just kind of an extension on the last one. So I programmed in this language, I'll program in a new one. Or I've made this type of app, I'll make it slightly different. So DevOps is kind of interesting because like every time we had to do something, I really kind of had no idea how we were going to do it and learn as you go. But it's kind of weird in that I feel like every project I do in DevOps, I had the same exact feeling, you know, in making an app like, okay, this one's slightly different, but I'll get it. With DevOps, I feel like every project I get, I still have the exact same feeling of like, I don't actually know what this is or how to do it. Even though I've done something similar, this one's totally new. So I don't know what it is about DevOps, but every project feels like it's like completely new and unknown at the start.
And so you have that innate curiosity inside of you that you want to kind of tackle these unknown problems.
Yeah, I didn't realize this until talking to other people because it's so natural. So like somebody mentioned something about cooking. It's like, yeah, okay, great. How? Why? Like, why does the outside burn or poach or boil? Like these computers, why does this one faster or slower? And how did these things work? So anytime I hear something, it's that first reaction is like, well, here I go now. I'm going to figure out what's the difference between a coffee bean and a chocolate bean and fermentation and electronics and whatever. Like I can't see something without just kind of wanting to figure out how it works and why. Mm-hmm. And okay, that sounds normal. That's just my normal state of being. Until I realized talking to my wife and other people, it's like, oh man, haven't you ever thought about this? And like, no, they don't think about all of these things. They don't have like, well, you know, I was having fun and then I went on like a 2-hour Wikipedia binge over the like, why is the rail system different in the US versus Europe? Why do like different mountainous terrains, like anything? So I realized like, yeah, anything out there, if I see it, I just kind of need to figure it out, understand it.
So you have a really innate sense of curiosity.
Yeah.
And you started programming when you were 12.
Yeah.
But I know you were making a joke earlier about some other stuff.
Yeah, geez. Oh, you're like my path?
Yeah, you were kind of joking that like you weren't that good in high school and you didn't really apply
horrible.
Yourself.
No, because like this drive, this like wanting to understand things. So like if I see something like, okay, I want to figure it out. And then I want to try it and see like, oh, that's how it works. Mm-hmm. And stuff. But if it's not interesting, then of course, you know, I don't really want to do it. So like school, not that interesting. My dad would get so mad. He would get my report card back and like getting D's. It's like, you can't be getting D's. You're smart. I know you're not like unintelligent. So what's going on? So I go through my backpack and there'd be quizzes I never handed in, homework completely done, just sitting in my backpack. I'm like, well, it wasn't very interesting. I didn't feel strong about turning it in. So I just kind of didn't. And so that was always the struggle. Like I could do school, but it wasn't really exciting. So I didn't put the effort in. I really languished. But anything that caught my interest, like, okay, great. And I just went 110%.
I've actually heard that like from some of the best programmers that I know. They commonly say they hate school. Mm. They don't see the point of doing the assignments because it's so structured and so rigid, and they're interested in that thing over there.
Yeah.
And that's not on the coursework, and that's way more interesting. And I know a lot of people who have gone off and started their own company, they also think like that as well.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how it happened. Like I learned computers young because I got bored and I was like, well, what else can I learn? You know, like reading the encyclopedias, that's kind of cool, but that's kind of dry. It's like, what is this old box that we have in the basement? So I want to learn it. But it wasn't kind of like, okay, let's sit down and learn the fundamentals and like who invented the computer and let's practice writing ones and zeros in cursive. It's so boring.
Please write binary for me in cursive. Yeah, I'd like to see that.
I know, right? It's just like sideways. But like that was the whole thing. Like, okay, I want to make stuff. Can this help me make things? And like that's all it could do because it wasn't fast enough to play games. I got games as gifts and I was like, thank you. And then it's like, well, it doesn't work with my computer. So I literally had to make anything I used on it. Mm-hmm. So that's what was interesting, right? This is a way for me to make all that stuff in my head that I'm thinking. Great. But then you get to school and it's like, well, don't worry about making things, doing things, having any practical application. Just practice rote stuff. It's
like, no. Memorize this and regurgitate it onto a test, please.
Yeah.
And it's important because I've decided that it's important and you need to learn it.
Or maybe it's not important, but you still have to do it. So yeah, I'd say I'm very driven by like, I want to make stuff. I want to create things. Mm-hmm. So it's learning what skills or tools will let me do that. So that's interesting.
So who got the computer for you that you had access to at 12? Because you're probably similar in age to me. And it was, you know, an anomaly to have a computer in your house when you were younger. So how did you get a computer?
So I found this computer because I got bored. I'd played with everything in the toy box. I'd read all the books in the bookshelf. And so I started going through the random storage closet and there was a computer there. So I asked, like, what is this doing there? And my mom's like, oh, you know, your dad went to the store and the guy convinced him that a computer would be amazing. You can do so much with it. He bought a top-of-the-line thing. Then he got home and realized there's nothing he can do with it. He doesn't know what to do. So it sat there for years. So it wasn't even an old computer. It was an old computer that then sat in the closet for years. And I was like, well, this is a new toy. I want to play with it. You know, I play with the saws. I play with whatever I can find in here. So computer, this looks really complicated. I want to play with it. And my dad said, he later admitted this was a tactic. He said, you can't play with that unless you read the instruction manual. Because the instruction manual was like spiral bound 700 pages long.
Oh my goodness.
Because it was like how to connect it and then the theory of DOS and then how to program programs because it didn't come with any programs. So it was like, you know, this was his way of basically saying, no, don't touch my fancy thing that I spent money on. So then I don't know how long it took me, but I went to him and said, okay, I read it. I read the manual. Can I play with the computer now? And he didn't believe me, but like I just... You know, he told me to. So I read the 700-page book. I'm like, okay, I understand DOS. I understand BASIC. I understand programming fundamentals now. So I want to do this. And he let me set it up. But I think he never intended on letting me do it. He just kind of felt guilty because he said I could, assuming I would never read this book at 11.
Okay, I was going to say, how old were you when you read a 700-page book?
I think I was like 10 or 11 when that happened. So then he let me do it. And then I just like... turn it on and it didn't do anything. So then I just started learning how to program. And that was that.
So you have your innate curiosity, computer that your dad told you not to play with, which made you want to do it even more. Mm. You didn't really like high school. Did you go on and get a bachelor's degree?
Yeah, I did. I went and got my bachelor's in computer science or computer engineering. Mm-hmm. So I figured I'm already in computers. I'm already doing it. You know, every night I just do it as a hobby. So I guess I'll go into it in college because otherwise, what would I do? Just sit around. So I did that and it was kind of the same thing. There were certain things that interested me and I did well. And then there were things that seemed kind of rote and kind of boring. I did poorly. I think one of the worst classes I had that I did the worst in was engineering ethics, which was you had to go to class once a week and show up for half an hour. And I got a D.
Because you didn't show up?
Because I didn't show up. Because it was so uninteresting. So I thought like, oh, it's like, I'm going to spend all night programming, but I don't want to show up once a week to talk about ethics. So little effort, but I couldn't like get myself to go do it. So that one I almost failed.
But, computer ethics is important.
You would think so. You would think so. But you can't make stuff with ethics. So like, okay.
But yeah, you sure. have to follow ethics to make something.
You should. You should follow ethics. But I would argue most people probably don't put the ethical into what they're making.
Maybe. Well, I mean, let's hope people follow some level of moral code when they make code.
True. True. But yes, I do have that gap in my educational history. So
if I ever see anything fishy.
Yes, if there's something unethical, you know why. It's like, oh, he didn't go to that class in college. So I got my bachelor's. And then I didn't have like a goal in mind. Like, okay, I'm interested in things. I want to make stuff. But you don't go to the job board and they say like, okay, we need someone to make things. We don't know what, just interesting things. Like if that was a job description, I would have done that like in a heartbeat. But it's like, okay, you can have an office job, you can have a startup job, but all of it requires you to like kind of chase something down and put effort into it and do the boring parts, applying to jobs, interviews and stuff. So again, it's like, well, that doesn't seem interesting. So I just didn't. And I just kind of bummed around for a year. My friend had a house in Jamestown, which is this like island right off of Newport in Rhode Island. And it was an old house and they had tons of rooms. So they're like, well, you can stay in the spare room. So I was like, sure, like I'm not working. I'm not going to school. I'm not really doing anything. So yeah, I'll just hang out. And it wasn't a spare room. There's a closet and you have coats in the closet. And if you push the coats aside, there's a secret door. And if you open the secret door and crawl through, there's a little hidden room. That's where I slept. In this like.
So you slept in Narnia.
I slept in Narnia. Or in like Harry Potter's little like under the stairs. It was under the stairs. And it did that for like a year. And his family was great. They would have these like big philosophical discussions. And they would say like, oh, we're going to go swim to that island over there miles away. Do you want to come? I was like, no, I can't swim that far. It's like, oh, we're going to go fix the roof. And we're going to like cut down this giant tree. Do you want to do this? And like, okay, yeah. But they would also ask me like, so what's your goal in life? Like, where are you going towards? How are you going to use this thing? What are you going to do to make the world better? And it's like, my answer was basically like, oh, I have no idea because I don't have a goal. Like if there's something cool, interesting, I'll do it. But you know, what's my 5-year plan? It's like, who knows?
Most people don't think in terms of a 5-year plan. We have to be taught. Like they ask us a lot in school or in like workshops, what's your 5-year plan? Because most people are like, yeah, I'm just going to kind of go in this direction. I mean, I've even had a guest point blank say a 5-year plan doesn't work for them. They don't want to think of their life in terms of 5 years.
I just recently started thinking about my future, meaning what am I going to be doing next year or 2 years from now? Even that's pretty new for me, I'd say, because like, it's kind of still that thing of like, okay, I'm right here. What around me needs doing or is an interesting problem? So like, you know, DevOps, I was a full stack engineer. I was doing app development. I never planned on getting into DevOps, but it was kind of a thing where like, here's all these engineers. Here's this thing that we desperately need and nobody knows how to do it or is doing it. It's like, all right, well, I don't really care what I do. So here's a new cool thing to try. So I went into it. But never had a plan of like, you know, what's my long-term goal? Where is this bringing me? It was literally just, here's a cool thing I can do. Something new to learn, something to create.
And so you've changed from that point of view to planning a year out?
I guess not even planning. Now I actually ask myself, so what do I want to be doing in a year or two? I would still say I don't have a plan. I simply just kind of keep asking myself, like, what I'm doing right now, like, do I want to do this in a year? And usually the answer is like, kind of no. So then I kind of keep asking myself, okay, so what is it I want to, what does it look like I want to be doing?
I don't put like time boxes around what I want to get done. I have goals and I'm like, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this. And I don't know when I'm going to do it, but I'm working towards these things. And one of them recently was getting my motorcycle license.
Nice.
And I'm like so stoked. Now I have to go buy a motorcycle to go with the license. But that was, you know, something. And another one was I just did an LLC and I'm officially a landlord now.
Cool.
But those were always goals that I had and I didn't put a timed event around it.
Oh, man. I think that's the problem for me. I have maybe a million goals. But so like I started to list them down, like the things I want to do, like I want to make a bed because I saw one. I thought I could do something like that.
Carpentry?
Yeah.
Oh,
woodworking.
Awesome.
I want to do more 3D printing. I want to get into like making circuit boards at home and then like working out. So I have a million goals, but that's kind of like anything, like having a million goals is kind of similar to having no goals. Or at least it doesn't really give you direction, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like if I just have like, or I have a million goals, like great. So which ones are you going to get to next? Or you're headed a certain direction. Is that bringing you closer to any of the goals?
Mm-hmm.
So like, well, I don't know, because the goals are just like a huge, like mass of things that I could be doing. And maybe I'll just kind of pick one up and play with it for a while. But as far as like accomplishments, I think that's a lot harder. So accomplishments, yeah, that's like not many. Like that lightsaber project I did, one of the biggest things about it was that, not that it was so hard to do, because it was, or that it required learning so many things, but it was that I actually completed something,
mm-hmm.
which is huge. Because mm-hmm. I can remember going back, like when I was little, I'd be like, oh, I'm going to learn this and learn like 70%.
Mm-hmm.
And like, here's another cool thing and learn 70% until one day I realized I'd been programming for years. I've never actually completed a program, a working program. I have many like kind of, sort of prototype, but never something that actually works completely end to end. And I'd say that's a good analogy for like all these things, like mm-hmm. tons of goals, but accomplishing, like really fulfilling one of them, like, yeah, it's very rare and a lot harder, I think.
I mean, that is a normal human thing, or a lot of people in computer science, I've talked with them and they say that kind of the same thing, that, you know, the last 10 to 20% of something is the hardest. So you like, you learn everything about Terraform except the last little bit at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, I just learned how to deploy on Azure like a couple months ago. So, but I knew everything else in the pipeline other than the deploy part.
I've always wondered, like, is it just like, yeah, everybody goes through that. You have to eat your vegetables. Mm-hmm. You don't want to. Well, some people do. For me, I don't. So like, you got to do the thing you need to do, not just the things that's fun. So I always wonder, like, is this a normal every person thing? Every person has to kind of like do the bits that they find enjoyable and like, but also do the extra part to finish it off that's like really annoying and hard, but needs to be done. One of my former mentors like wanted to have basically two teams, one that just go rush to and like just attack the really hard, interesting, fun stuff and just do that. So they just, no vegetables, all meat, just do the fun, interesting things and then take off. And have a second team that comes in and does all the like harder, more boring parts. And I thought like, that. Well, that sounds horrible.
Who would sign up for the team that does the horrible parts? Who would agree to be like, yes, all I want to do is the awful bits no one else wants to do.
Well, I guess I wonder.
And how much does it pay?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Because like, I wouldn't be motivated by the pay, but I would definitely be motivated by like, you get to work on some really cool, interesting things. Great. But if there was another path where it's like, well, it's pretty easy and it's not hard, like, and you're going to be like praised and all that, but the things you do are kind of boring. It's like, oof, that sounds like torture. So I always wonder, is there a counterpart? Like, just like, you know, I need to know how everything works and other people don't. Are there people that actually don't want to constantly be forging unknown, risky, challenging things, and they want this stuff that's more predictable.
I mean, I think there are people that don't like it. I think they're called green, they call them green pastures or green grass projects.
Hmm.
Or it's called greenfield projects.
Greenfield, yeah.
Which means that like no one's ever done this before. Right. And I'm a greenfield person. Like, give me a project no one's ever done before. I'm like, yes, please. Like, no one knows how to do this. Let me learn this. But there are some people that terrifies them. They're right. Like, the book says we use Kaplan-Meier curves, and that's all we use for like a data science reference. But I mean, the same thing could be said in DevOps. In this situation, we only do this.
Yeah. And I guess I would compare it to somebody who wants to like do the rough pioneering work and someone who likes refinement. Like, here's something that works. Let's keep refining it better and until it's like a well-oiled machine.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope there are people out there, because I would love it if, you know, like the whole Jack Sprat and his wife, right? One would eat a part of the meal, one would eat the other part, and they complemented each other perfectly. Like, how great would it be if like, okay, here are the parts that I love doing and I just can't stand these other parts. And there's somebody that says, I'm the exact polar opposite. I feel like if those two people exist in the world, it's really just a matter of pairing them up in productive ways. So that's what I always hope is possible. Because otherwise it's just, well, I need to eat my vegetables and I'm not. So I just need to work on that difficult part. So I don't know.
Well, is there any other bits of advice? Other than some people like green grass projects, some people like stable work, having a curious intuition probably leads to liking the green grass projects.
Yeah. I guess I always kind of say like I'm kind of in a year of discovery. Like, I spend so much time saying, oh, this is why I work this way. Like, I am this and this is not what everybody is, right? Like the green grass thing, the adventurous or risk averse type thing. Or even curious versus not. And I think knowing so much more of how I am different from others is really helpful, which helps me understand why I do the things I do, but also why I like the things that I like. So like I keep telling you, like in high school, I did really poorly. And now I know it's because I don't think it's a good thing, but I didn't put the effort in if it didn't seem interesting and challenging. So it wasn't like hard work is harder. Like, hard work is easy because the hard work is interesting. The easy stuff, go to class once a week and sit there quietly, oh, I can't do it. So if I realized this earlier, I think I could have maybe dealt with it better. It's like, okay, I know I don't like to do that, but if I plan it ahead and ask somebody to keep me accountable and like walk to class with somebody, or if I like do my timesheets first so I don't always forget because I actually don't want to do them. So if I had more strategies dealing with like, this is my brain and it works this way. So these are the tricks I need to like work around that. I think that really would have helped if I'd understood those things earlier.
Or if you went to like a Montessori style high school where they let you self-study.
Yeah.
Because then the tests would have been the interesting stuff you wanted to go study.
I don't know, because I definitely would have thrived and I would have learned a lot, but I still think I would have performed poorly because at some point you have to go take the test or you have to like show up and you have to do those things. So I don't know if I would have thrived or if I would have been like really, really happy, but completely still not having enough structure in my life. But I think I would have enjoyed that a lot more.
Any other piece of advice?
Yeah, I don't know. I think talking about your motivations and understanding how you're different from others, that really seems to be key for me.
But understanding oneself is usually like to be quiet and reflective on who you are. Like, a lot of people don't do that. Like, how many people... Like, do you sit in the car and just not turn on music and just go through your thoughts and reflect on the day?
I mean, yeah, because I'm a night owl. So like I work, you know, I have social time and then I'll stay up late and it's completely silent. There's nothing going on. There's no obligations. There's no homework. There's no work. So I'm just sitting there. I would literally just sit there and stare at the mirror and just kind of think through things like either parts of the day or questions I had or, you know, random things that came up. So I think I spent a lot of time introspecting. So I feel like I should have understood these things earlier because I spent so much time thinking about them. But I think it's not enough just to reflect on like, oh, okay, so yeah, I feel like I was quiet today. Well, that's interesting. But were you quieter or louder than others? And is there a reason why you were? And are you a certain personality that, you know, gains energy from quiet time, or you actually need socialization? So understanding that level of depth. So it's not just the time spent thinking about it. It's actually, I think, maybe having tools or experience of like, oh, there are different types of people. You actually kind of fall into this type of bucket, and here are some implications. So yeah, I like introvert, extrovert is like the famous one. Understanding which you are, what that means, and then realizing, oh, that's why I get stressed out. Even though I love being around people, I get stressed out when I don't have this other thing. And then all of a sudden you have this tool to use of like, well, you build in the time you need around the things, and then you can kind of do both better. So yeah, I don't know. Just maybe everybody should take psychology or something, right? I don't know.
I mean, I found what helped me a lot was going to talk therapy and having someone ask the right questions so I could answer them and then make the realizations for myself.
I always wish I had what they had in the sci-fi movies of those AI mm-hmm. that were super smart, all-knowing.
I have something to show you after we get done with this.
Okay.
It's on my phone, and it's an all-knowing AI.
Oh, I can't wait.
And it talks to you like Star Trek level.
Yeah, that's what I always thought would be amazing, like having this like really smart, intuitive intelligence in your ear, just like your personal conscious almost.
You can if you put in AirPods with your iPhone. It's called Pi, P-I.
P-I?
It's Pi.
Or what's that show, Mrs. Davis, with a similar kind of idea? Mm-mm. Like an always-on AI that everybody was connected to? Or Her?
Her, yes.
Yeah, that kind
but
of
then
thing.
They fell in love with her, and then they fell out of love with her.
And then they evolved into who knows what. But yeah, that like AI or a human therapist or even just like good friends to talk to or mentor. Like I think a good mentor, someone who has like the really neat blend of experience and insight and understanding of who you are and not just, oh, everybody should do this. I think that would have made the biggest difference. Yeah, so go find a mentor, but the right one. And you won't know who the right one is because you don't have the experience and the insight.
Hi, I'm Sarah from Sarah in Tech. And I just want to give a shout out to, if you want to learn more about Sarah in Tech, follow me on LinkedIn. Just look for Sarah Herberger, that's H-E-R-B-E-R-G-E-R. Or on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, we have Sarah in Tech as the handle. If you're looking to hear the unedited version of all of these interviews, they're available on Apple, Amazon, and Spotify. Just search for Sarah in Tech.